Radha Madhava Kunj Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunj Bihari Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivaro Dhari Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivaro Dhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Teeravana Chari Yamuna Teeravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunj Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunj Bihari Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Teeravana Chari Yamuna Teeravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunj Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunj Bihari Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraja Kacharya Stuttara Sita Shishimad His Divine Grace Siddhesi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Kuntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitai Gopremanande Hari Bol Samaveta Bhakta Brinda Ki Jai All grace to the assembled devotees. All grace to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Nigama Kalpataror Galitam Palam Shukamukaram Ritadavasamitam Pivata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam Mahura Horasika Bhuvi Bhavukaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 24, Renunciation of Karma Muni. Text 29, word meaning sa eva, that very same, Bhagavan, Supreme Personality of Godhead, adya, today, halanam, negligence, na not, ganahya, considering high and low, na, our, griheshu, in the houses, jata, appeared, gramyanam, of ordinary householders, yaha, he who, swanam, of his own devotees, paksha poshana, who supports the party. Saiva Bhagavanadya Helanam Naganayana Griheshu Jatu Gramyanam Yaswanam Pakshaposhana Saiva Bhagavanadya Helanam Naganayana Griheshu Jato Gramyanam Yaswanam Pakshaposhana Porshana Swanam Baksha Parshanam Saiva Bhagavan Adya Helanam Naganayana Griheshu Jato Gramyanam Yaswanam Baksha Poshana Saiva Bhagavanadya Helanam Naganayana Griheshu Jato Bhagavanam Yaswanam Baksha Poshana Translation: not considering the negligence of ordinary householders like us, that very same Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in our homes just to support his devotees. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Devotees are so affectionate toward the Personality of Godhead that although he does not appear before those who practice yoga in a secluded place, even for many, many births, he agrees to appear in a householder's home where devotees engage in devotional service without material yoga practice. In other words, devotional service to the Lord is so easy that even a householder can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead as one of the members of his household, as his son, as Kardama Muni experienced. He was a householder, although a yogi, but he had the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kapila Muni, as his son. Devotional service is such a powerful transcendental method that it surpasses all other methods of transcendental realization. The Lord says, therefore, that he lives neither in Vaikuntha nor in the heart of a yogi, but he lives where his pure devotees are always chanting and glorifying him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Bhakta Vatsala. He is never described as Jnani Vatsala or Yogi Vatsala. He is always described as Bhakta Vatsala because he is more inclined toward his devotees than toward other transcendentalists. In Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed that only a devotee can understand him as he is. Bhaktya mam abhijanati. One can understand me only by devotional service, not otherwise. That understanding alone is real, because although jnanis, mental speculators, can realize only the effulgence or the bodily luster of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and yogis can realize only the partial representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a bhakta not only realizes him as he is, but also associates with the Personality of Godhead face to face. Om jnanati mirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshuran militamena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri prabhupada ki jaye. So Kardama Muni is offering prayers to the Lord, because the Lord has appeared as his son. It's interesting, many times in prayers we have spoken in the second person, in other words, you addressing, but then in the third person. A lot of times the prayers go back and forth. I don't know if you've ever noticed that. Someone is glorifying the Lord and they say you, and then they say he. So we also have this here, talking about what the Supreme Personality of Godhead does, in kind of the third person here. Now, yesterday's Friday's verse: after many births, mature yogis, by complete trance and yoga, endeavor in secluded places to see the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in that purport, Prabhupada mentions several times, many, many years, many, many births. This kind of phrasing we find so many times in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Many births, many years. Sometimes it raises many questions for me. Because, for example, Prabhupada talks about Valmiki Muni meditating for 60,000 years. So as far as I know, that was one birth. That wasn't many, many births. He just sat down. Of course, maybe he practiced for a while before he started. But at some point, he meditated for 60,000 years. So when I hear about many births, I think, wait a minute. So they meditated, they didn't quite make it. So the yogi didn't quite make it. So it took another birth. And then, of course, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that the unsuccessful yogi, he takes birth again. First he says, Suchinam Srimatam Gehe Yogo Brashta Bhajayate. The fallen yogi, because Arjuna is asking him, well, what if you don't make it? What happens? You just lose everything. So Krishna says, no, you take birth as Srimatam Suchiman, either as a in a good Brahmin family, or else rich person's family, which is also kind of interesting. I'll go off a little offshoot here. I was thinking how this is considered to be a good thing. Christians presenting this as a good thing. He's a practicing yogi, didn't quite make it, so he'll get another chance because he'll take birth in a Brahmin family or a Srimatam family. So Sri, of course, what is Sri? Sri means opulence. So Srimatam, one who has opulence. So Prabhupada says an aristocratic family or a rich family. But I was thinking how Nala Kuvera and Mani Griva, they got cursed because they were rich. Narada Muni, he said, being rich is the worst thing you can have. He said, I'm going to give... It's interesting, this is another sidetrack from a sidetrack. But in that section, Narada Muni, he gets into four verses, he talks about animal killing. I think, why is he talking about animal killing? But he says that when people have money, basically, they kill animals. Somehow or other, he links those two together somehow. And of course, then he says that he's going to curse them, of course, curse slash blessing, to take birth as trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, which will be, of course, is eternally the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj in Braja. One thing about that pastime I've always, and he blessed them that they would remember what they had done. Something, well, it's one thing to be stand as a tree for 1,000 years of the demigods, 36,000 years. You know, if you're dulled out as a tree, okay. But if you have, like, human consciousness, and you think that'd be pretty traumatic. You think you'd pretty much have PTSD when the whole thing was done. Imagine having, you know, awakened consciousness for 100 years of the demigods standing there. Anyway, of course, they got their reward. They were given Krishna Prema. They attained Krishna Prema. Of course, another funny thing about that pastime is then they go back to being demigods again, instead of going back home, back to Godhead, or entering into Krishna's Leela. Anyway, so many bewildering things. So anyway, these yogis, they practice Suchinam Srimatam Gehe. So I just got off on that. So that's the first thing. If you've practiced, but not for a very long time, then you take a birth in that way. You get the opportunity to continue. So first thing I think is, well, you don't remember. That's the other thing about many lifetimes. You would think, okay, I did make it last time, but who remembers? I don't know what I did in my last birth. So maybe I'm continuing now, but I'm not aware of it. Of course, what Krishna says, especially in the next verse, he says, then one takes birth in a family, if one has practiced a longer time. Now, he doesn't say this directly, but the commentators all say this. The second birth is when he's practiced for a longer, or does Krishna say it, actually? Anyway, if you practice for a longer period of time, then you get a better opportunity to take birth in a family of transcendentalists. It's interesting in that purport, Prabhupada mentions transcendentalists and Goswami families. So usually we don't have good opinion about Goswami families, but he mentions it in that purport. And he says, Krishna uses the word there, avasha, which means automatically. Literally means without, you might say, conscious endeavor. Vasha means control. Actually, so avasha means it's kind of out of your control. You're just spontaneously attracted. Just like many devotees come to Krishna consciousness and they, somehow or other, they're just attracted. So many people are not attracted, but a lot of people, it's like irresistible. And that's, of course, an indication supported by Bhagavad Gita that something was happening in the past. So in anyway, I'm thinking, it seems like this idea about many births, I always thought that, well, it seems like the yogi would know, but maybe the yogi doesn't know necessarily. That attraction is just there. I'm connecting this to this idea of Valmiki Muni meditating for 60,000 years. So that was like one birth, apparently. It's just a long birth. Jerry Prabhupada said this was during Satya Yuga when, you know, he would have lived for 100,000 years anyway. So 60,000 years of meditation. We have so many of these long periods of time and big numbers in the Bhagavatam, long periods of time. I was thinking one thing in this context. Sometimes we have these debates. When did the Lord, did this incarnation appear? Which yuga? And we hear about the four yuga avatars in the 11th canto. So Satya Yuga, we look back and say, Satya Yuga, that was such a long time ago. But there's, what each one of the manus rules for 71 of those satya yugas. That's just one of the manus. In a day of Brahma, there's 1,000 satya yugas. So it's like a lot of times we kind of focus in, like with a magnifying glass. A lot of the things that we discuss, that are discussed in the Bhagavatam, they're in a relatively short period of time. But sometimes it's expanded out. There's like the different avatars. So when I hear that, for example, this is the yuga avatar for satya yuga, so this is, are we talking about just this round, the 28th cycle of yugas in the Vaivasvata Manvantara? Are we talking about all 1,000 of them in one day of Brahma? And that's only one day. So it's so long. But then Lord Brahma has some associates, they live for one day of Brahma. That's like really a long time. So this is, of course, an indication of who Lord Brahma is, how he's so far beyond. You know, the demigods, whenever they get into trouble, they go to Daddy. They go to Lord Brahma, can you bail us out here? Because he's way up there. He doesn't have anything to do. There's a funny, Lord Brahma, well, Lord Shiva also, of course, he's way up there. You know, in the whole Daksha Yajna fiasco. So they offended Lord Shiva. And ultimately they went to Lord Brahma and said, I think we did something bad, so what should we do? Well, you have to go to Lord Shiva. You can't get any success in life by offending someone like Lord Shiva. So you go there. So they went. Lord Brahma led this whole entourage of the demigods to go see Lord Shiva at Mount Kailash. So when they get there, then Lord Brahma is asking, can you forgive them, you know? And Lord Shiva says, I don't take them. They're just insignificant, basically. They're just like ignorant children. I can't get offended by anything they do. So he's transcendentally, or almost transcendentally, whatever his position is, Lord Shiva. So he's not concerned about their, whatever they do, the kinds of things that they do. So again, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, they're way up there. So when we talk about these many lifetimes, even that, what is that to Lord Brahma? That's nothing. Even if you were to meditate for a whole day of Brahma, what's that? It's one day for Brahma. That's nothing. Millions and millions, or billions of years. Billions of years. So we have these long, long periods of time. And we hear it in the context. We hear it in the context of yoga, of course. Krishna says, yogis or jnanis, bahunam janmanam ante jnanavamam prapadyante. Something interesting about this verse, I was just looking at it. Because I'm involved in editing, we finished, actually. I don't even know if I should mention editing. I might get assassinated sitting up here. But there was a group of devotees, very intelligent, good, honorable devotees. They went through the whole Bhagavatam. The whole Bhagavad Gita, and looked at everything and considered. You know, they wanted to do like a final version. So I was part of the committee who was involved in that. So we were looking at things very closely. And even now, when I go back to the Bhagavad Gita, I see, maybe we didn't get this one here. It's not clear. You know, many of you probably don't know involving this whole controversy about editing Prabhupada's books. I'm pretty sure it was in 1977, earlier, Srila Prabhupada came across some mistake in his book, and he ordered that all of his books be essentially re-edited or proofread, checked for mistakes. He set that in motion just some months before he passed away from this world. So Prabhupada certainly authorized it. And there was no indication that they should stop the process when he left the planet. So anyway, I said something in favor of the editors who took on that responsibility. So in any case, a lot of times, and because I'm an editor, so it's always in my mind, I look at things closely. So I was looking at this verse, Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavamam prapadyate. It says, after many births, one who has knowledge, then he realizes that Vasudeva is everything, basically. After many births and deaths, actually, the word there is, but when I'm janmanam, it just says janmanam, but Prabhupada translates it as births and deaths. But the verse, in one sense, unless you know what was just said, what the context of it is, it's talking about jnanis, but the verse itself doesn't say anything about jnanis. It just says, after many births. So after many births, who or what? Or after many births of what? What's implied there is after many births of cultivating spiritual knowledge, then one comes to actual knowledge. It's not just after many births of being in this material world, you come to understand who Krishna, you know, that Krishna is everything, but after many births of cultivating transcendental knowledge. So this is another thing, and actually Prabhupada quotes this, of course he quoted it quite often in his classes, and Prabhupada usually, he put this in the context of jnanis, of course, as it is in Bhagavad Gita, but also yogis. Actually, a jnani has to become a yogi. The jnanis have to meditate, move up to the yogi. You have to get the meditation sometimes. Just with your mind and speculating, you're not going to get anything from that. You get some realization, but you should be getting some impetus that I have to do something. Now, I understand, just like that implication is there when you become a devotee. Well, if I'm not this body, then what I'm doing now, I probably should be doing something else. Right? If I'm a spiritual being, that means I probably have to change the way I'm living, change my goals in life. So the jnani comes to that realization. What do I do? I want to realize that transcendence. And the jnani understands that, realize Krishna, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. So yoga is necessary. So the jnani has to come to that point of meditation. And again, it can take a very, very long time. This is another point Prabhupada would make, and he's made in these couple of verses here, that the yogis can do it for a very, very long time and still not be successful. They can be tripped up. One thing I came across recently was surprising. I've been reading Prabhupada's Gita, and then I've also have next to it, I have the commentaries of Baladev Vidyabhushan and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So I was especially looking at the word for words in Prabhupada's Gita and looking at the translations. And a lot of times, you know, I'm not a Sanskritist, but there's so many words that we're familiar with. We hear them all the time, and the Bhagavad Gita is full of them, words that are very familiar to many of us. So I look at it, and even though I don't know Sanskrit grammar, I say, well, it's really straightforward what's being said here. But it's not always straightforward, actually. Of course, even Arjuna said, Krishna, can you clear this up for me? Seems like you're saying contradictory things here. Can you help me out? So the commentators don't always say exactly the same thing, which is interesting. Even Baladev, and of course Baladev is some kind of disciple of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and his take on things is not always the same, which to me always raises a question that, well, of course Krishna is mystical. He can do so many things simultaneously. But one would think, on the face of it, that Krishna was saying some particular thing. He was trying to communicate some particular point. But we see that sometimes the commentators say, well, Krishna might be saying this, but he might be saying this. And they don't always agree. I'll give you an example in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, Arjuna asks, who's in the better position or who's higher, the devotee or the jnani? And, of course, Krishna says, well, the devotee is. But then he says the jnani eventually will achieve me. I think that's the word that Prabhupada uses. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says, what that really means is that the jnani gets Brahman realization, and Brahman is none different from Krishna. That's what it means, that he achieves me. So slight difference in understanding here. So we find that kind of thing. So this is another one where the jnani is practicing for a long, long time. Now, we also find that to attain perfection in Krishna consciousness may also take a very long time, right? Because I was also, I just started reading. I'm always jumping around reading this and that. I've got too much time on my hands, I guess. So I read a lot. So I started reading Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Raga Vartma Chandrika. It's about Raganuga Bhakti, actually. And basically the premise of it, the point that he makes, is that, you know, you set yourself, if you have some, to begin practicing Raganuga Bhakti, Raganuga means to you're following the footsteps of the Ragatmaka devotees. That means the devotees, Krishna's eternal associates. They're filled with love for Krishna. And you feel some greed. The word is often translated as greed or intense longing to have that same kind of love yourself. And it has to be a real thing. It's not just some intellectual thing. Oh, yeah, I understand that. That's another thing in Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes I'm confused when Krishna says, no. One who knows, janma karma chame divyam yo veti tatvata, yo mame tatvata, one who knows me in truth. So we all think, well, I know, Prabhupada taught, it's all there in his books. I know who Krishna is. I know his birth is transcendental. But I've come across in different places where Prabhupada says, to know, one must be on the transcendental platform. You have to actually know, you have to be liberated. You have to be free. A conditioned soul doesn't actually know what Krishna's janma and karma is. You have to actually get to because Krishna says you'll never take birth again. So to never take birth again, you have to be on the transcendental platform. So in any case, so even for a devotee, you know, it may take a long time. As I was saying in this Raghava Chandrika, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, you know, you have to have that desire. So there's that verse that's from the Padyavali, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita Mati Kriyatam Yadikato Pralabhyate Tataloyam Api Mulam Ekanam Janma Koti Sukrite Nalabhyate. Now, this is the verse that says, if there's one price to get Krishna Bhakti, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita Mati. Prabhupada said this is where he got the phrase Krishna consciousness from this verse. Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita Mati. The Mati means consciousness, of course. So Krishna Bhakti Rasa. So to get that, what is the one price? Intense greed, intense longing for it. And it has to be a real thing. You really, really, you don't want to live without it, you can say. You need it that badly. It's like a person starving in this. It's, I have to have the food. You know? And that's the only thing. So that has to actually be there. But then it says, janma koti sukrite nalabhyate. That doesn't come automatically after many lifetimes of sukriti. Now, to me, this is a little ambiguous because sukriti can be taken in different ways. You could say, well, of course, if sukriti is material piety, like digging wells and planting trees and whatever, giving to the poor, well, I know that's not going to give bhakti. Bhakti only comes by Krishna's mercy or by Bhakti Devi's mercy. It's not, you can't earn it through material things. But there's also such thing as Bhakti Unmukhi Sukriti, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about. And Prabhupada mentions it, I think, only in one place in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So there are things that, of course, in Prabhupada's phrase, awaken Krishna consciousness within you, or somehow or other makes you a suitable candidate for receiving bhakti into your heart. So that can also take a long time because you have to really want it. Although Bhakti Devi does come as a child, actually. I take a walk every day and I listen to some things. So I've recorded different books, and one of the books I recorded is Bhakti Tattva Viveka by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Really a wonderful book. It's actually four essays that appeared in Sajjana Toshini. Then they were compiled into a book. So they're based on the Bhakti Sandarbha and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So he summarizes many of the points about Krishna consciousness. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he describes there how the sadhaka has to be so careful. He says as soon as one meets the guru and takes up Krishna consciousness, then Bhakti Devi is there from the very beginning. But then he says, he also, of course, Bhakti Lata, you get the bija, and you get the sprout comes from the bija. But a sprout, of course, is very tender. I know I have a garden now, or planting flowers, and when the sprout first comes out, sometimes you want to water, and even the watering, you have to be careful, because you can destroy the plant if there's too much force in the watering. So, but in any case, he compares, actually, this plant of bhakti to a young child, a little baby. He says, he's like a little baby. You have to be so careful with a little baby. So it's the same way you have to protect all around your bhakti creeper. just like a little baby, just like you would protect it, you know. You, when you hold a baby, you're really careful. You don't want to drop the baby. So you have to be really careful. So he describes like that. But he says that right from the beginning, Bhakti Devi is there. But she manifests over time, of course. And we compare it to the Bhakti creeper. So she grows just as a child. If the child is taken care of, then the child will grow to full maturity. So what's implied there, of course, is that, you know, it can take some time. It doesn't happen overnight. There, we know we have this phrase that devotional service is a gradual process. Sometimes I, what does that mean? It means it's not, you know, when we're new, I know when I first came to Krishna consciousness, one of the first things I asked devotees after I'd been there a few weeks, I'm reading Prabhupada's books and I keep hearing about pure devotees. And I asked some devotee, are there any pure devotees now besides Prabhupada? And he said, well, some people say so-and-so, I won't tell you who it was, because he turned out not to be a pure devotee. Actually, he had some problems in Krishna consciousness. So, you know, my point here is that it's gradual. You know, it's going to take some time. Don't expect it to happen overnight, or 6 months, Prabhupada would say. By meditating for 6 months, you realize you're God. So you don't get Krishna consciousness in 6 months either. So it's a gradual process. But sometimes I hear devotees, they use that phrase when their sadhana is not very good. Well, Krishna consciousness is a gradual process, so I'll gradually take to it, basically. I'll gradually improve. Of course, we should improve, that's true. But, I'm not following, because Krishna consciousness is a gradual process. Someday I'll start following the regular principles and chanting my rounds. So that's not the meaning. The meaning is you do the right thing, exactly. Actually, you're supposed to be a perfect sadhaka, really, to progress in Krishna consciousness. I mean, just read Nectar of Devotion or Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu and you'll see what it's about. You have to really take to it seriously. Even then, actually, this is another thing Bhaktivinoda talks about in this verse, Bhakti Tattva Viveka. He says there's actually two kinds of greed. The sadhaka also has to have a kind of greed, but it's a greed in the sense of, you know, a dedication. That I have to do my sadhana. I have to chant my rounds. I have to follow the regular principles. I have to go to the temple, and you know, all the things that we do in Krishna consciousness. He makes a list, visiting holy places, and you know, all the things that we do. So that also, there has to be some, you might say, greed for doing that. But then there's the other greed where it's really the heart is overflowing with this pull of Krishna, feeling that irresistible pull of Krishna. That has to come at some point. So again, I was thinking of all these things in this context of how the yogis, it takes them such a long, now especially the yogi. Now Prabhupada here, of course, his whole point in the purport is that, well, devotional service is so easy. The yogis are trying for many, many, many lifetimes. And what are they going to get? Maybe they'll see Brahman or Paramatma at the best. And they get distracted with these siddhis, because they're so amazing. You can control anyone, you can do practically anything. So there's a lot of the lure of the material energy there. You can get distracted. So here Prabhupada presents it as, it's just amazing. Now, the what point, I was actually thinking of going through the purport, but anyway, in the first sentence, Prabhupada says, devotees are so affectionate toward the personality of Godhead, that although he does not appear before those who practice yoga in a secluded place, even for many, many births, he agrees to appear in a householder's home where devotees engage in devotional service without material yoga practice. So right away, I just got this verse. Devotees are so affectionate toward the personality of Godhead. So that's what it's about, ultimately. We have to have affection. We have to have love. We have to have love for Krishna. Then anything is possible. Isn't it true, even in the material world, people have love for this or that? People do so many amazing things, crazy things, actually. life-threatening things they do out of love for the sport or whatever. It's like they have these people with these flying suits, you know, they jump off mountains and they fly through the air like a bird. And they fly through little holes in the rock or something, some crazy things. Why? Because they love it.
You know, they just love it. There's that old joke about, you know, why did you climb that mountain? Because it's there. So somehow there's just, people have this pull for something in the material world that's out of love. So that, of course, that pull is pulling you into the material world, keeping you, whatever it is. We all have something pulling us, keeping us down, tying us in. So we have to feel the pull of Krishna more. And of course, what Prabhupada gave us the process for doing that, cleansing the heart. As the heart becomes cleansed, then the natural attraction to Krishna begins to awaken. So I like the way Prabhupada used the word here. Devotees are so affectionate toward. So affection, of course, even because he's talking about householders. So in household life, there's affection, naturally, right? Affection between husband and wife and affection for the children. Even it's irresistible, small children. I mean, who, you see the antics of some beautiful little child, and who's not attracted? You just naturally, you say, oh, how sweet, how cute. And everybody, most people do at least, natural respond like that. So that kind of natural response to Krishna, that has to arise eventually. And when it does, Krishna can become your child, actually become your child, as he does here. So Karma Muni, he's saying, I'm just an ordinary guy. Even though it can take yogis so long. Of course, he was a yogi. He was an amazing yogi, actually. I think I mentioned in my last class, I read out the purports in this earlier purports in this chapter. And because Kardama Muni, he's kind of an enigmatic figure. As many, pretty much everyone in the Bhagavatam is to me. Because I wonder, why did he act like that? You know, him and his wife going around having sex for 100 years on a bed that increased sexual desire and all of these things. But Prabhupada never judges him in this whole chapter. In fact, he says that his greatness was not as a yogi, but as a devotee. So Prabhupada, he characterizes him as a devotee. So in that sense, we can put it all in a lila. You know, this is all setting the scene somehow. And there are lessons to be learned that the Lord is going to appear as his son after all of these things going on. So here, he had the Lord as his son, not because he was a yogi by some yoga practice, but because he's a devotee. That's why the Lord agreed to appear as his son. And of course, Lord Vishnu appeared to him earlier. So he must have had some devotion even in his earlier yoga practice, because he was practicing yoga not as an impersonalist, because the Lord appeared to him in response to the kind of meditation that he was doing. And then he told him that, I'm going to send this beautiful girl, Devahuti, and you'll have 9 daughters, and then I'll appear as your son, and so on. So he's one of the great personalities of the Bhagavatam, Kardama Muni, and he's... Now, of course, now the surprising part is he's going to leave home. That'll be explained, why he's doing that. All right, verse again. Saiva Bhagavan Adya Helanam Na Gunayana Griheshu Jato Gramyanam Yaswanam Paksha Poshana. I'll just measure this word, paksha. There's this, I guess it's just a saying. I don't know if it comes from the Shastra. Jayatas tu pandu putranam yesham pakshe janardana. Prabhupada quotes it. It means all glory. Is it to Lord? The Pandavas are glorious because they're under the wing, under the protection of Lord Krishna, Janardana. Jayatas tu, or all victory to. Jayatas tu pandu putranam. Yesham pakshe janardana. All victory. Victory will come to the Pandavas because they're under Krishna's protection. So here he's, Prabhupada has this word here, paksha poshana, who supports the party. So party, paksha. Paksha also means wing. So we have the expression, take someone under, you give protection by taking someone under your wing. It also means, another place I came across it, it means the, when one has one's hair parted, the one side, each side is called the paksha, the side side of your hair, called paksha. So anyway, the translation, not considering the negligence of ordinary householders, Here's another interesting word, Helanam. Helanam is one of the Nama Basas, chanting the Lord's name with negligence. So Helanam, Helaya, with negligence. Comes up in many Bengali songs, actually. Helaya. So here, Helanam, not considering the negligence of ordinary householders like us, that very same Supreme Personality of God, it appears in our homes just to support his devotees. Swanam, of his own devotees. Swanam. Krishna refers to the Brijbasis as Swanam, his own people. So, anything? Trivikram Prabhu.
In Satyoga, Yoga Dharma is meditation. So it seems like everybody is yogi, whether householder or or
talk directly.
Sannyas. Is it sangin?
Yeah, but just put it directly in front of your mouth.
Yeah. So it seems everyone is yogi, you know, whether householder or sannyasi or brahmachari. They're all practicing meditation, so mm-hmm. they're doing yoga. So, but it seems Srila Prabhupada made a distinction there, or divorce itself, that the householder is in a special position because they're thinking about the Supreme. But to me, the Yoga Dharma there is meditation, but and that is meditating on the Super Soul. So everyone seems to be thinking about the Supreme.
Yeah, what's exactly going on? There's a lot of things that are not clear to me exactly. I don't have a real clear picture of what things that went on. One thing is, of course, we're talking about very, very long periods of time. Now just think, only 5,000 years ago. We have to say only because that's nothing, 5,000 years ago. But even, you know, so many things went on that we read about, like in the Battle of Kurukshetra and so many miraculous things. And there are a lot of things that happen, and you think, what? How does that work? And that was only 5,000 years ago. So what if you're talking about 5 million years ago or 10 million years ago? How things change over time. And they also, you know, this is the ocean of material existence, so there are ebbs and flows, things change over periods of time. And we know, for example, in Kali Yuga, there's going to be a good period for 10,000 years, relatively good. So there's a general flow of things, but then sometimes, you know, things change. So it's hard to pin it down because we do hear, of course, that in Satyayuga, there was one ashram, the Hansa ashram. And then in Treta Yuga, then things, we hear more about, you know, the other ashrams. We hear about, of course, Vedic sacrifice centers. So the Hansas, it says, they're all in meditation. But then we hear about things that happen in Satyayuga, and you think, wait a minute, they aren't all meditating. All kinds of things are going on in Satyayuga. It doesn't seem like everyone's just sitting around in an ashram meditating. So I don't know how to put these two things together exactly. Because it does, at least I think it's in the ninth canto where Prabhupada talks about it. And there he said, you know, you get the idea that they're all paramahamsas, actually. Hamsa, the Hamsa ashram, they're paramahamsas. So they're just completely detached from the things of this world. But then we read in other places where different things are happening in Satyayuga that, you know, sages are cursing and all kinds of mundane things apparently are happening. So I don't know how it all works. Again, there's 1,000 Satyayugas in one day of Brahma, so it may not all be the same. You can talk about maybe in one of them they're all Hamsas, but maybe in the other 999 there aren't or whatever. So things, you know, things can change. Although, contradict myself, in the second canto, I guess it's Shukadeva Goswami is speaking, says this is the way it is in every creation. In other words, this is like the model. He describes how creation takes place. And then he says, this is the way it is, was now, or, you know, in this time. This is the way it was in the past, and this is the way it's going to be in the future. So we're given that it's, you know, there's a certain consistency in what goes on in Brahma's life, in Brahma's day. Because for Brahma, it's just, know, well, he's not going to change his mind from 1 minute to the next. For him, it's nothing. So these things go on, they're under his control. And he essentially, of course, they're not, even the descriptions of the creation are not exactly the same. But in principle, there are many, many things that are consistent. So Satya Yuga tends to have certain characteristics, but they may be sometimes more prominent, sometimes less prominent. There's even the idea, although I've heard this argued against, but it talks about, the word is kalpa. And Jiva Goswami quotes a verse in the Tattva Sandarbha where it seems to imply that certain days of Brahma are more in the mode of goodness, some are in the mode of passion, and some are in the mode of ignorance. But then I heard another interpretation that kalpa also means shastra. It's a kind of shastra. So it could be that certain shastras are more prominent in one day of Brahma than another day of Brahma. So these things, because, you know, words mean different things. Not just in Sanskrit, in English too, we have the same words that can mean half a dozen different things. But so that's one reason that the translators can interpret things in different ways. I mentioned before, if you read Brihad Vaishnav Toshini of Sanatana Goswami, his commentary in the 10th canto, he sometimes gives half a dozen different interpretations of the same verse or the same sentence of a verse. Because this can be this, where if you connect these two verses, words together as one word or two words, and besides, this word has, just like Lord Chaitanya, 61 explanations of the Atmarama verse, right? So what does he do? If you read that chapter, it's hard to figure out what the 61 are. I've tried before, and I haven't really concluded what they are exactly. But it seems like what he does is he gives explanations of individual words. It's not like he's giving a different purport to what the verse itself means, 61 different purports of the verse. Because that's what it sounds like, right? 61 meanings of the Atmarama verse. So it's not like that. He's explaining different parts of the verse and how they can be interpreted, different words can be interpreted in a certain way, but they all align with the overall meaning. That the Atmaramas, because Krishna has transcendental qualities, even the Atmaramas are attracted to engage in his service. So anyway, I don't know why I said that, but anyway. Something else? Yes, Prabhu.
Jai, thank you so much for your wonderful Krishna Katha. I was thinking on the Satya Yuga, like, well, when you mentioned, like, the, you know, is everyone sitting around meditating? Meditation for a yogi, as you were saying, they're detached from everything in the world. So meditation is not restricted to sitting on the kusha grass.
Yeah.
Everything they're doing in Satya Yuga, they're in meditation. They're absorbed. And as the yugas go by, just like we wake up in the morning, if we have our sadhana, that's our Satya Yuga. Right, then you go throughout the day and your consciousness is more and more becoming diminished, especially if you're in the material world and you're working and you're, so, you know, it's like the microcosm of the macrocosm. And I thought it was also interesting what you were saying about Lord Brahma. Just like us, some days we have good days, other days we have maybe more hard days. So to hear you share that also about Lord Brahma, like, even as great as he is also a conditioned living being in the material world. So I found that oddly comforting. But yeah, I just wanted to share.
Well, that's one thing I can mention authority on, is that Lord Brahma is not always a bhakta. He doesn't always go back to Godhead at the end of his life. There are sometimes Brahmas who are jnanis or karmis. And because, you know, again, we have this small little speck that we look at, but, you know, the lifetime of Brahma is so long. But what is the lifetime of Brahma for Lord Vishnu? It's just one breath. So the Brahmas are coming and going and coming and going. And we're coming and going and coming and going for who knows how long. So, Yeah, well, the perspective you were giving, I think it's good. Yeah, it's a good way to look at it. In such a yuga, because they're so Krishna conscious, they're meditating all the time, in a sense, not necessarily just sitting there. But even we have this picture, like I have mentioned this before, that Shamika Rishi, so he was a great yogi. He was good enough yogi to actually transcend, you know, Turiya, come to the fourth stage beyond the three states of normal consciousness in this material world. But he had a son, so he must have had a wife too. So he had a family, but still, he was still so adept at his meditation that he could go completely transcend in his really transcendental meditation he was practicing. So that's another idea with many lifetimes, that you know, in his next life, he'll be attracted to that again and live the same way. You know, there are these hermitages and villages, sometimes sages living in the forest with their families. So they're living, one of the first things, actually, when Devahuti asked Kapiladev, how exactly do I practice bhakti yoga? One of the first things he says is go to a secluded place. So you of course, probably mentioned that so many times, you can't really practice yoga in the city. So you go to a secluded place. So it seems like that in a sense, what Shamika Rishi and sages like him, when they went outside the city, you can say, out into the woods or the country, so that's for them. They weren't alone, not in complete seclusion, but they were secluded from the general mass of people, you can say. They were performing in their community of sages living together, practicing their meditation. So they might do that lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, get the opportunity to do that until their meditation becomes fully mature. Prangavinda Prabhu?
I was contemplating that this 10,000, you can say golden age in the Kali Yuga, but it is not really Kali Yuga, it's just a beginning. What they call dawn.
We're still in the sandhya.
Yeah, sandha, yeah. Junction. So in Satya Yuga or Treta Yuga, even Treta Yuga, when you see 75% good quality, but Ravana was there. Mm-hmm. None of his citizen was worshipping except his brother. That was also hiding me. So in Satya Yuga also Hiranyakashipu was there. So how do you say
yeah,
that
yeah.
He was like saintly. Not really.
Yeah, of course, Hiranyakashipu is also acting on a, well, not cosmic, but at least up to Swarga Loka, I suppose. Although it's sometimes said the whole universe. Although I sometimes think the word universe is used kind of loosely sometimes, where it means maybe up to Swarga, not where the sages are on Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Brahmaloka. They're not influenced. But in any case, yeah. There was great influence of the Asuras. The Asuras, they live somewhere in these lower regions between the earth and Swarga.
So and, my question is, like, when Prabhupada says, when Allen Ginsberg asked Prabhupada what it will be after 10,000 years, so Prabhupada said, I will eat your children, you will eat my children. What does that mean? Like, really going to start?
What did he say?
I will eat your children.
Oh, I'll eat you and you'll eat me, yeah.
Are they really going to start like that's was?
Well, we're talking about the end of Kali Yuga. That's a long time from now. So there'll be cannibalism. And actually, who knows? Some people claim these things are already going on in this world. Right? Of course, they have gone on in the past. And Rakshasas are always there. Eating, you know, maybe not their own children, but others' children. Actually, it's 9 o'clock. We're supposed to stop. Yeah, we need to stop. It's 9 o'clock. That's what the rules are. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.